This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by IT Pro TV, an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. Visit itpro.tv/what-the-tech and use the code WTT30 for a free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your account. What the Tech? Hey, everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm not joined by Paul Theroux. I'm joined by Ayaz Akhtar from CNET.
Hello. Good to be here.
And from the GFQ Network.
I'm at CNET, GFQ Network, findicomedy.com, lots of places. If you go on the internet, you'll find me somewhere.
You're easily discoverable and also a very good friend of mine.
True story. Yeah, we've been friends.
Yeah, we are friends.
Years now.
So. 22 years? How long?
I think it's about 85 years now.
Yeah,
it's really been a long time.
We discovered the potion of youth, and it's growing a beard and being a little tan.
Yeah, that definitely works with lots of people, and that's why we look so good.
I'm 345 years old, boys and girls. Today it's going to be fun. I do have a lot to talk about, and obviously, who better to have talk about the latest tech news? there's nobody better than you, actually. Talk about a lot of this stuff because you covered every day.
Mr. Theroux is very, very good. He's a friend of mine as well. I've known him for a lot less time, maybe about 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. So he knows his stuff, I think.
He's in Germany right now and he's not able to connect with us. So Ayaz is here. I do want to talk about this. Apple had a bunch of announcements. They restructured their lineup with very little publicity when they did it. I was very surprised that this came out. You didn't hear a lot of rumblings regarding a lot of this stuff, which I want to talk about. But before we do, and I know, this is so easy when we do this. Ayaz, you are very familiar with itpro.tv.
That's true. Yeah, I've known those, at least I've known the service for a long time. It's been this is not a joke. I've actually known this for about like 5 or 6 years now.
Yeah, and they have a great promotion. When you use the code WTT30, you get a free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your account. So I've been talking to people about this for a while now, and before, I mean, they came out as a sponsor of the show. I've been taking a look at the service and I was very familiar with it. This is a very interesting way to learn something, something in IT, in tech. A lot of times when you are taking a seminar, when you're taking a course, a webinar, it's not really high-end production. With these guys, we're talking very high-end production. The set is absolutely stunning. Ayaz has seen it. It's a beautiful, beautiful setup that they have over there. And they offer, and this is a great thing, with IT Pro TV, they offer over 2,000 hours of content. And more than 30 hours is added each and every week. You can watch on demand or live worldwide via Chromecast, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, or your PC. Course topics include everything from ethical hacking, which is an amazing course, to Windows servers, to Photoshop, and an intro to JavaScript. So I'm actually starting out the Photoshop course because I made the mistake of stop learning. that's a big mistake, especially in technology, especially when your company grows. You sometimes stop learning because you've learned everything that you've needed to get to where you are, and you've hired people. It is the worst decision you can make. I have to relearn everything I knew about Photoshop because it's been about 6 or 7 years since I've actually used it on a regular basis. Also, and certifications. You know, why not grow within the company that you're in or go on to a bigger and better job by being certified in something that you did not know? You could do everything from desktop remote services to AWS solutions. They have a tremendous list of courses that you could take with them. IT Pro TV clients include Harvard, MIT, UCSD, Stanford, and more. You can take advantage of their low monthly subscription price with no hassle and cancellation policy. IT Pro TV offers 3 levels of membership, which is unbelievable. And you can get way more information by going to itpro.tv, or you can go to itpro.tv/what-the-tech. That is the link. We'll have it in our show notes. or you could just go to itpro.tv and you can sign up there with the offer code WTT30. I'm gonna put you on the spot right now, Ayaz. Is there something that you've wanted to learn for a while that you could possibly do?
Well, when it comes to software, I learn a lot about. I've been learning about Photoshop for a while. I've been learning about Premiere because I used to use Final Cut a lot. But one of the things I've been really fearful of learning and getting better at is just understanding networking in general. Like, I kind of have a decent background in it, but I don't have a professional style amount of information in my head. And one of the things is, I can go online and I can go to YouTube and I can find these tutorials and things. But the problem is you have this varying and inconsistent production.
Yes.
You might not be able to find part two when you're at part one. And it gets very difficult to find a complete course. And that's one of the things about itpro.tv is that you can actually get from beginning to end a course that is produced very well. You can hear them. It's not like some guy talking on some it's really crappy mic, and you can hear the clacking of the keyboards. It's not like that. It's a really well done course. Like, it's a class. It's not like those crappy amateur stuff. So it's really helpful to learn this information in this kind of method, because otherwise you can get disengaged very quickly and then quit on your courses. But these guys, they do it really well.
When Paul's back next week on the show, I'm gonna demo the course that I'm gonna be taking, and Paul's gonna be taking a course too. So we're gonna be demoing that live on the air. itpro.tv, use the code WTT30 and you receive a free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your account. I want to thank these guys for supporting the show. Ayaz.
Yes.
Question. You work in technology.
That's true.
And Apple had a round of announcements this week. Mm-hmm. I actually just got an iPad Pro for a work reason. What?
The 12-inch one or the 9?
Oh, the 12-inch one.
The big one, okay.
The big one. And I put this question out there, and I said, other than the arts, what purpose does this device serve? Why do I need a 12.9-inch iPad? I have a reason why I'm using it. It's a very specific reason, but I'm curious as to why other people need it. Now, it was given to me by the place I'm doing some work with to do a certain thing for them. But I'm trying to understand the everyday person using this device. And it kind of ties into this iPad lineup and Apple's kind of vision that's kind of changed over the last couple of years. I don't want to say a useless device, but it's not a laptop replacement in my opinion.
Okay, so I can see your position if you're going to go from laptop to iPad Pro, because it's a tablet.
It's a tablet.
So the thing is, though, I think for a lot of people, at least in the past 20 years or so, their first computer at this point has been their phone. And learning how a phone works and how these apps work, it's a whole learning experience. So when you go from a phone to a desktop, it's a totally different interface. You're talking about windowed applications. You're talking about running multiple applications at one time. And these phones have gotten better and better at kind of emulating some of this stuff, but they've brought it down to a screen that is smaller. And then we had the tablet explosion, so the screen got bigger. So the thing is, I think for people like us who have been on desktops before, used to a mouse or a trackpad and a keyboard, all that stuff, if you're used to that, the iPad Pro or iPad or any of these tablets, they seem like a bad idea because it can't do what we need it to do. But we're kind of in the minority when it comes to using computers, right? Like, we're using a lot of heavy software, video software.
Some mixed environments. I mean, I'm using an Android. I'm using an iPhone. You know, it's a totally mixed environment setup.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, to go from an iPhone to an iPad Pro is not that big a leap. They already know how everything works. And one of the things Apple used to be great at, and they're not the best at it anymore, it was just basically teaching people how to use their stuff. And when it comes to the iPhone, a lot of it was, or iOS, a lot of it was intuitive. And iPad has that same intuitiveness. So I think for maybe not our generation, maybe the next generation, an iPad Pro could be of a lot of use because they've slowly added so many features. Here's a multitasking. Here's how it works with a keyboard. Here's how it works with a pencil. So it's becoming more laptop-like, but it's a totally different take on how that windowed environment was, because we've been using this Windows system for a really, really long time. So
yeah, I don't know if it's a generational change. You know, I was at the Rangers game last night. I was having a very interesting discussion with a guy that's in the steel industry, and he has a very successful steel business. And he was telling me how, you know, his accountants have convinced him to upgrade all the computers for different ways of accounting. And he's done a certain thing for the last 30 years with his accounting. And this is how he's always done it. And he doesn't want to change. And he was looking at me like I'm some, you know, I'm the new generation that wants all this change. And for me, it's, you know, this is what I've been brought up with. Obviously, that's what's happening with this younger generation because this is their phone. This is what they know. So Apple's philosophy is, well, if the iPhone is their entry point to computing, the tablet will be the next point, and a bigger tablet is obviously their version of a desktop. I'm trying to understand if this will continue, this almost dumbing down of software and simplifying should be the term, actually. Simplifying of software and simplifying computing, is this the turn that we're going into? We're going kind of backwards with it, or is this just a little hiccup in the story of how we've used technology, and we're going to kind of bounce back into, you know, more of the traditional PC?
You know, it's really hard to tell where this is going because we've seen all kinds of variants. When Windows 8, I think it was, when that came out, it was tablet first, and it had this very jarring effect on people because you had these full screen apps that had a lot more touch first kind of attitudes, and people weren't ready for that yet because they were used to their desktops looking like desktops, and when you force them to switch, that's different. Apple, they're kind of copying a lot of the stuff we've seen with Windows 8 and Windows 10, basically having two big apps up at one time or picture-in-picture video. A lot of this stuff we've seen before, but they're trying to keep it separate from that world of laptops and desktops. Although Apple these days is positioning the Pro, iPad Pro, as a super, and they write period, computer, period. They claim it's a laptop replacement. I don't see that. I can see it doing a lot of stuff that people do on their laptop. I see it more like a Chromebook style thing. Very expensive for that. And yes, for arts, I think when it comes to being able to draw on a Surface, I don't mean that as a Surface Pro or Surface anything, but being able to draw on a Surface with a pen or a pencil, I think that's just fun. But I also used to draw a lot, so that's totally
thing. But this is an interesting thing, right? Like, lack of support for legacy stuff, right? That would be kind of what drives people to change platforms. When certain things are no longer supported on a platform, you kind of gravitate towards another one. Let's go with a younger generation. Snapchat, Instagram. What do you do this on? Your phone. You do it on a tablet. You do it on a phone. You cannot do it on a PC. You cannot it on your MacBook. So,
I mean, there's lots of people who try to get Android apps to run on their PCs.
By the way, I'm one of those. I do that. I do that for my social media management.
Yeah, you can do that with like BlueStacks and things, but that's the weird thing because we're trying to get all of the apps to work everywhere. And the weird thing is a lot of the apps that went from the desktop world, they're finding their way a lot easier into the phone, into the tablet. Going the other way is a lot more difficult, it seems like, because the interfaces are so different. It seems like adapting a desktop app for a phone is a lot more known. It's a lot more simple than it used to be. Because if you want to go way back, Microsoft trying this with, like, think about Pocket PC.
Yeah.
They were trying this windowed-like thing. You'd have a start button. You had this.
It's still Windows. It's Windows in your pocket more than anything else.
And that was a huge problem because that wasn't rethought to think, hey, what is the best usage for this kind of thing? So I don't know if we're in a hiccup. But the thing is, what we're seeing, I think we're in a convergence period. We're seeing PCs that they're hybrids. It's a tablet. It's a laptop. It's also it's a tent style. Think of the yoga. And you're like, okay, what exactly are we trying to do? When do you need a tent style? How is that different than just holding the laptop this other way? I think we're in this kind of like identity crisis mode of what is a computer. And the other thing is, there's nothing wrong with having both in the world. Just because I don't want to use an iPad Pro because I want to use Premiere Pro properly, I think there's a lot of people out there who would be like, yeah, this is just fine. I don't need a lot more than being able to browse the web. I don't need much more than two apps at one time. I don't need more than this. So it might just be that sweet spot for certain people. Like, this is just good enough. Because don't forget, Apple's biggest thing has been, we want to make sure that we have a personal computer, a computer that you actually use. And in some respects, you know, the iPhone and the iPad is kind of more that every person device than a laptop was.
Yeah, it's an interesting transition, and it kind of ties into this announcement from this week where Apple and I'm glad they did this. They should have done this a while ago. They've eliminated the iPad Air. No more Air. It's just the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
Does this mean that the MacBook Air is also going to slowly go away, considering they have a MacBook?
No, I mean, they kind of killed the MacBook a while ago. I mean, I know they have the 12-inch MacBook that's super thin and everything.
Super thin one. But do they need the Air at this point? Does the MacBook, do they need a MacBook Air?
I think so. Because that's, well, I mean, in name, maybe. Just, they got to figure out their line. Right now, that's kind of, I think the Air line's already got enough inertia. They're probably not going to change that just yet.
Hasn't been updated whatsoever. Still the, you know, ridiculously old display.
Still waiting for that Retina display. Still waiting for some cool stuff on the iPad Air. But it also is, I believe, the entry-level Mac. So if you want to get a laptop that's low-cost and runs OS X, that's how you get it.
Yeah.
And they're still thin. They're still light. And the weird thing is that design, when Steve Jobs showed it off a long time ago, that envelope, is still the base design for every Ultrabook that
exists.
Isn't
that amazing? Isn't that – and you think about how long ago that was.
A long freaking time ago. It was really long ago, and now we have the thin MacBook, which is supposed to be the model for the rest. I don't know if that's going to happen or take off. But when it comes to the iPad line, now there's just iPad. There is iPad Pro, which is two models, and then there is the iPad Mini 4. So, the iPad Mini 4 is the only one with a number on it, by the way, right now.
They're going to have to get rid of that, too. The numbers are going to go. So the iPad Air 2 is gone. It's just the iPad. And starting $329.
Yes.
That's not a bad price for a 32-gig version.
So 32 gigabytes. They've updated the processor inside. It's got an A9, which is the same processor in the iPhone SE and the same as in the iPhone 6S.
Yeah.
So it's not as fast as the iPad Pro, which has the A9X. So I think that what Apple wanted to do is to have a new low entry point. And this is the cheapest iPad you can buy, by the way. It's the 32 gigabyte, like you said, is $329 because the iPad Mini 4 only comes with one config, and that's 128 gigabytes. And that's $399. Which
do you think that's changing? I mean, that's a little weird too, right? That entry point is a strange entry point to be at.
Yeah, I could see that Apple's trying to get people to go with the larger iPad. And when you get the 9.7, you look at the 9.7, you're like, wait a second. If I spend $170 more, and that's a huge jump, by the way, I can get an iPad Pro. And the weird thing is the 9.7-inch version of the iPad Pro has better specs in some respects than the 12-inch version, because the 12-inch version came out first, and the 9.7-inch version came out second. But it has better cameras and better, I don't say a better processor, but it's got better specs in general.
Yeah.
So it's that same kind of when you showed up a long time ago to Apple's site and be like, iPod start at $49. Because it was the shuffle that's like this big and it didn't do anything.
They're going to have to, the pricing structure at this point is all over the place. I'm looking at this, and this is what I was thinking today. You know, $399 for an iPad Mini because there's only a 128 version. $329 for the iPad, and then if you want the iPad Pro, it jumps $179. There's no consistency as far as the pricing goes because they've been kind of moving things back and forth.
Yeah, I think they're still trying to figure it out. I think there will be simplifications of these lines in general. They're very much out of whack when it comes to when things are being updated. Like we were saying earlier, that it's unusual that Apple sent out press releases and said, this is what we're doing. They didn't have an event for this. They didn't bother to say the iPad Air is no more and we're trying to simplify things. They just said, this is what we're doing. This is how it is. And very quietly did this. I'm assuming this is to kind of steal some thunder from Samsung, who's got an event next week, and LG, who had their G6 the other week, and a lot of other phones that popped up during Mobile World Congress, because nobody was talking about Apple. I think the thing that actually gets people more interested is that red iPhone. You've seen this, right?
Yeah. First of all, it's the first one that they've done like this.
Yes, it's the first iPhone that's been part of the product red line. They've done it with the Nano, they've done it with the iPod Touch, but now there's two red iPhones, the iPhone 7 and the iPhone 7 Plus.
I'm actually very surprised that this did not happen years ago.
Why do you say that?
This has been the rumor since, I guess, the original iPhone, right?
Well, I mean, they've had a product red iPod and things like that, but the iPhone is their bread and butter. They want to make sure that this device is in the hands of everybody. And the weird thing is, in this time where everyone's speculating on the next iPhone, the iPhone, it's been called a million things. iPhone Edition. Is it called the iPhone 8? Is it called the iPhone 7S? I don't know what the next one's called.
I actually want to touch on that a little bit. And then I want to continue this. But you reminded me of something very interesting. So right now, I'm managing multiple accounts, right? I have my personal cell phone, I got a work cell phone, and I'm curious as to, and I know we got a bunch of people listening to this. After the fact, there'll be tens of thousands of people downloading this, which is unbelievable that so many people still listen. I find it interesting that there hasn't been this major, major push for the multiple colors for Apple, right? They love doing that. They love, you know, giving you the options for all this. And we're starting to see that. The other thing that we have heard rumors of for a while is that iPhone Pro. That was coming out last year. They were saying, well, they're going to do an iPhone Pro. You know what I found would be such a useful feature for an iPhone Pro? You're going to think I'm nuts for this, okay? I'm managing all these different accounts. Would it be difficult to have managed, like with iMessage, for example, with an iCloud? You could actually have multiple iCloud accounts and multiple iMessage accounts, and that could be the Pro feature. This will be your enterprise feature. Just like how you could have multiple email accounts, you could have multiple iMessage accounts.
So are you talking about like an accounts-based thing where you can log in to an iOS that says, hey, I'm coming in as Andrew, or no, I'm coming in as What the Tech? You're managing them both at the same time.
You're managing both at the same time. You could log in and out, obviously. You could manage like that on, let's say, on your Mac. But I would like the option to have multiple messaging services because, give an example, I got a work phone and I got my personal phone. I actually, not like most, I like to do all my iMessage and my SMS through my laptop because that is my point of me working. I don't like to work on my phone. Why couldn't I just say, okay, you know what? I want to have the ability to do multiple accounts. And this is like a Pro feature. You could do this on the phone. You could do this on the tablet. You could do this on the desktop. I don't know. This was just something I was thinking of.
I'm looking into my Mac itself. I think you can actually do that.
You cannot do multiple iMessage accounts.
Not other messages accounts. So if you had Google, Yahoo, AOL.
You could have 15 different accounts. Yeah, you could do that with any other account. You just can't do it. Yeah. It's tied to iCloud. Everything is tied to iCloud.
That's interesting. All right. Well, I'm not really sure what to do about that.
I don't know. Tell your friends over at Apple. I ask.
Yes.
Andrew has a problem. Andrew and the one other person has a problem.
All zero of my friends at Apple. So, yes, I will definitely tell them. You hear that, guys? All right. They heard it. Anyway, the red iPhone. Do you think this is going to get people excited? Because I think it is.
You think so? Okay, tell me why.
Okay. So one of the things that Apple was really good at and was design, right? And people would look at that device and go, what is that? Yeah. And you'd see the Apple logo. You knew what it was. Nothing else looked like it for a while. Then everything else started looking like it. And now you have this idea of, well, what is that? By the way, is that a Pixel? Is that an HTC phone? Is that a Samsung? And whatever, et cetera, et cetera. But that product red, that shade of red, they've had a lock on that for a while.
Yeah, that's actually right. That'll separate them from everything else. That's actually I didn't even think of that.
And it's in that identification that's important. Samsung, on the other hand, they're like, look, we're going to have the edge display. And when you see the front of this, you're going to know it's a Samsung.
Yeah, until Apple does it and LG does it, you know?
Right. So it's just how long do you have an exclusive looking device or a device that is unique to the eye? Because the head turning feature is important. It really is. I'm not like you go to the subway or you go anywhere in public. And if you see a red iPhone, it's going to stand out. It really is. But it might not be a huge driver of people to this device. I could see the next iPhone including that. Maybe this is just testing the waters to see how it sells, see how it does. But then again, one of the reasons why Apple didn't bother with multiple colors, since like the iMac days where they all came in colors, I believe it's because of Tim Cook. He is very much a supply chain guy. Yeah. Want to make sure the profits stay high. The more variants you introduce, the more difficulties you can have.
Yeah, I mean, they have an uphill battle here. You know, the competition has gotten so good as far as Android goes. You know, Samsung is the S8, you know, the rumored S8, which I know you've covered for about 3 years now, right? You've been covering the S8 coverage for about 3 years.
Yeah, we've been looking for this phone. We've been hearing about this. It's been leaking for the past 3 years, it feels like. But it's been about a couple months that we've heard about the S8 regularly. It's like weekly.
But it seems like it seems like this is going to be a very strong phone for Samsung. I mean, their reports that are coming out, it's the battery life is actually they've taken a lot of time on the battery to make sure that this thing is going to work well. But you know, they're going to do pre-orders soon. This thing is going to ship. This thing is going to come out. I believe it's coming out. They're going to unveil it on the 29th in New York.
Mm-hmm. That's the plan.
Yeah. So that currently is the plan, and I'm seeing more and more Samsungs being used. I'm observing this. You know, I see what people are using, and people that were iPhone users have gone over to Samsung. And I think once you switch over, it's going to be a hard sell to go back. But I have to tell you, you know, I've been using this iPhone 7 Plus for about a week now, and I'm just not an iPhone person. I like my MacBook. I'll use a tablet if I have to. It is just, I'm having a difficult time adjusting to simple things that on Android make more sense for me. The settings menu makes more sense to me. The way that I go into my phone book makes more sense to me on Android. It could be because I've been using Android for a long time, but I've been in the iOS ecosystem, and I have to tell you, I prefer Android over iOS. I've determined that at this point, and I'm surprised by that. My biggest fear was that I wouldn't like Android once I went over, and I'm totally out of the Android ecosystem at that point, but I this is just my preference.
Yeah, my personal phone is a Google Pixel. I was looking at the Note 7 for well before it came
it
out.
It blew up, like, yeah.
Yeah, then there was a problem with it, as everyone knows. And because I like the idea of being able to jot down notes, then I saw Google, what they were offering with the Pixel. It's my personal phone. I paid money for it. I had an iPhone 6 before it. So I do prefer at least Google's version of Android, where it's clean without Samsung stuff. That's one of the things that keeps me away from Samsung is that even though they're less heavy-handed when it comes to skinning Android, it's still there's always some kind of disconnect in logic for me when it comes to Samsung settings or Samsung's helping features. It's like, listen, I know you think you're being helpful, but you're kind of getting in my way. And yeah. That's actually something that drove me crazy about Apple when it came to iOS, which I use my iPad regularly. I think iOS is a terrific tablet operating system.
Absolutely, yeah.
But when it comes to a phone, I want to be able to do more. I want to be able to glance at a lot more information. I know this sounds dumb, but one of the biggest things that I enjoyed about iOS when they came out with it was finally having a widget screen where I can see everything with a notification tray. Because I've been doing that with Android.
With Android, yeah.
I don't need the apps up all the time when I hit the home button because I know I have the apps. I don't care. I want to know the information in there. So I think for getting glanceable information and having full control of my music player right from a widget without having to go into the app, these are small things that I think makes a difference for me. So I don't know if one's better. I still like, personally, I like, for my phone, Android, tablet, I still like iOS.
So I'm going to tell you something. You know, I'm not one of these people that's committed to an ecosystem. And I know that you're like me also. You know, you use a Mac, you use an iPad, you use an Android, you use everything. Amiga, you're a big Amiga guy.
Constantly
using your Amiga. I've never understood brand loyalty. I'm only loyal to what works. And when it doesn't work, I don't use it anymore. I don't hang on to a brand and I fight for the brand. If it stops working for me, guess what? I'm not going to use it. With Android phones, I've gone from LG to HTC, back to LG to Samsung. And the last two phones, I've stuck with Samsung. But I'm realistic about the problems that they have. The iPhone, on the other hand, and Paul's been saying this for a while, and I really believe him. The iPhone 6 Plus is a better phone than the iPhone 7.
Why does he say that?
I have an iPhone 6 Plus that I use regularly for a lot of my messaging. The camera, I do not like the camera whatsoever on the iPhone 7. I don't think it performs as well under low light as the iPhone 6 Plus. And I am starting to notice a lot of hardware glitches with the screen. I'm having a lot of problems on this phone, and it's something that I've heard many people talk about. I don't think they built this. Is probably the iPhone 7 is probably the first phone that they made that was not better than the previous one. It's probably more close to being equal, if not maybe a little less equal. One thing, however, that I absolutely love on this thing is the battery life. This thing is a tank.
Yeah, when it comes to this, the first, the iPhone 7 was the first iPhone that had this kind of this 3-year cycle, because we haven't seen a new design since the 6. So we had the 6, the 6S, and the 7 look pretty much exactly the same. I believe the 7 has a haptic button instead of a push button for its home button. But significantly in design, it has not changed at all. So it could be some growing pains when it comes to that, because this is a very unusual move. Usually after 2 years, they chuck the design, redesign everything. And the fact that the hardware isn't optimized at this point is kind of disheartening, I would think, for Apple. Because if it's doing this and you're having hardware issues with a phone that's been around essentially for 3 years, it's kind of strange that would be going on at all.
Yeah, it's an interesting time that we're in with this. So let me just skip over the I'll go through the changes really quick here on the Apple stuff, and I want to move on. Yeah. iPad Air is now iPad. iPad Mini 4. There were not any big changes, but they discontinued the 32 gig model, and while lowering the price for the remaining 128 gig model, so they're probably getting ready for a new one. iPhone 7, iPhone 7 Plus now comes with the red version. And iPhone SE, Apple did not upgrade the mini size iPhone SE today, but it did double the storage. So yeah, that was the Apple.
Yeah, 32 gigabyte model and 128. So there's no more 16 gigabyte iPhone, I believe.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure that's the end of that.
Yeah. So to talk about, to kind of go back to Android here, this week, a lot of websites had a hands-on with Android O. And I want to talk about this, the next version of Android. Do we know what it's going to be called? I hope it's called, like, they've totally abandoned the food thing. Ostrich.
Well, ostrich is food, first of all.
You can eat an ostrich. Yeah, you're right. You can eat ostrich.
These things have been named after sweet treats for, I think, since a donut, I want to say, or something like that. So this has been a long time coming. So they haven't officially abandoned anything. Last one was called marshmallow. Is that what we're up to? No, nougat. Nougat was the last one. So, people are obviously speculating
Oreo.
That sounds perfect, but they did do Kit Kat, but this requires branding with Nabisco, I think. I would think it's going to be oatmeal cookie.
I that's what I had said. I had said it was going to be oatmeal. Just like an oatmeal cookie, yeah.
It's generic enough that way they can keep moving along, but whatever it's called, it doesn't really matter what it's called. I was looking at the specs of Android O. And there doesn't seem to be a heck of a lot of changes. It just seems like a lot of tweaks.
Yeah, so that has been the trend, right? So I received Android N on my Samsung S7 a couple of weeks ago. And I was astonished at the changes. And Paul and I were doing this comparison of what is Android and what is Samsung's UI. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it's a perfect combination, and Samsung has really pushed their UI and their skin of this version of Android, which technically, you know, that's the point of Android, right? That it's there, and then everybody kind of makes it customized and makes it a little bit different than the other one. You could still get the pure Android experience, the pure Google experience if you wanted to, but Samsung will be pushing their own version. What can you tell us about this version of Android? Because there's a lot of changes, apparently, a lot of tweaks.
Well, when I was going through this, the tweaks are a lot of this has to do with settings and there's better battery life. But if I was going through anything, you guys are going to fall asleep. It's really not that interesting. So I'm not sure where you want to go with this one, because it's just, okay, the notifications menu works a little differently. The settings menu is a little bit more streamlined. This is more of an iterative change than anything. So it's not like the last version of Android N, they introduced Doze, which helped battery life. The idea was your phone isn't going to be using as much processing power when you're not doing stuff. Background apps wouldn't use as much power. And this new version does a similar thing. So there's not a heck of a lot of like, let's get excited stuff. There's like, as far as I can tell, nothing. Did you see something different?
I didn't see it. I just saw UI tweaks. That's really what it means. And obviously they're talking about performance increases. An increase in battery life, which is a struggle for a lot of manufacturers with the battery life. I'm astonished actually how terrible my battery life is on my Samsung phone. It's really, really bad. It's not good at all. They're also, it seems like to me, they're also pulling back a little bit with the developer options.
Mm-hmm.
They're making it a little bit more closed for most people. I don't know. To me, this is just another small improvement. We're not getting these big changes. They're also, like the system UI tuner, you could go crazy with the navigation bar. That was the other thing that I saw, that you can modify the way that the navigation bar is set, which I actually like. The problem that I have is the way that I hold my phone. I hold it a little sideways with my hand, so and I'm always missing with the triangle, circle, and the square on the bottom. This one, you could have it left-leaning and right-leaning, which depends on how you hold the phone, which that's a nice little tweak.
Yeah, it's a good tweak because it actually helps with the usability of the device and that of your device. But that's one of the things I'm saying, that there's nothing to write home about when it comes to this. I'm looking at a list of changes, And one of the things that I would be excited about is picture-in-picture video, because I like having a little... I know Samsung, you can do that already.
So, explain to people what that is.
All right, so if you're running... let's say you've got a web browser and you go to YouTube's app and you want to watch What the Tech, and then you want it to still play on the screen, you should be able to kind of shrink it down and still browse the web while you're doing other apps. And in Samsung phones, they've done this for a while. This has been around, I don't know how many years, but I think since the Samsung S5, they've had this for a really long time, that you could have a floating window with video playing as you did other tasks. And in the next version of Android, Android O, this should be coming, which would be great. You have this little floating window, you keep do what you do. Because another thing that Google did with Android, they've helped the multitasking features over the course of the years,
yeah.
Which is weird because Samsung's had this stuff in their version of Android for a long time. So it's these kinds of cherry picking of features that helps, because people known it, they've seen it before, they know how it works. I think that's going to be very helpful for just general browsing. You know, I like having video on and want to take a glance down and pay attention and then go back to what I'm doing. Other than that little double window thing.
Yeah, we are looking. It seems like the final release will be released Q3. So if you're buying a new Samsung S8 when it comes out, the likelihood of you getting this soon is probably next year. You're probably not going to get this update. So this has been my struggle with Android forever. The fact that you buy a flagship phone and you don't get an update. You're always one version behind. I don't know if that's an incentive to buy the Pixel, or I don't know what that is. You know, like, it's frustrating to me that we're always behind in features if you don't buy a Google phone.
Yeah, and that's where Apple's got like everybody beat.
Yeah,
when there's an update, everybody gets the update right away. It's very easy to upgrade. There's not a lot of hurdles to jump through. One of the reasons why we keep seeing these delays is carriers need to approve it. The device manufacturer has to approve it. That's why Google phones are relatively good with that, because when you buy, or you used to buy a Nexus, now you buy a Pixel, when you do that, you're going to get these updates first. And that's really important for things like, you know, security, or if you see like a zero-day flaw,
yeah,
or something really compromised your security at all, you kind of want this update as soon as possible. And I think that should drive people, theoretically, to Google's version of their phone, the Pixel. But I have one right here, right? This might be one of the most dull designs in the history of design. Like, it's an iPhone looking thing.
It looks like an iPhone.
Yeah, like, there's giant bezels, there's no buttons down here, which they should have been, because there's this much bezel. So it's one reason to go, hey, the software is awesome, and you get these updates, and you should really get this phone because it's secure, more secure than the other guy's going to be, because you're not stuck waiting for, hey, did Samsung approve this? Did Verizon approve this? Did T-Mobile? Like, you don't want to deal with that.
Yeah, did it? Yeah.
So it's I think there's that weird line between software and hardware that sometimes people will go, that phone's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know it might not be updated right away, but I really want the phone.
You know, here's a good question, because you deal with a lot of these reviews, right? And I'll ask the chat room this. The fact that all these phones look like iPhones, everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't mean literally, but they essentially, if you glance at them, I struggle sometimes, and I follow this stuff. If someone is holding an iPhone or someone holding a certain Android phone, I sometimes don't know. I have to look and say, oh, that's an iPhone. And the only way I could tell is by the icons. That's the only way I could tell. Is that a good thing for the tech industry that we've kind of had this conformed image? Or is that a bad thing where everything kind of looks the same and there's nothing that really stands out for the most part, other than, you know, a curved display that Samsung is doing?
I don't think it's a bad thing, to be honest. I know when it comes to the way the systems work, there's nothing wrong with everybody understanding that this is the model that people can use. There's no reason to reinvent the wheel. Just because Apple had this version of it first, yeah, you don't have to have your apps up all the time. So you have an app tray or drawer, whatever you want to call it. It doesn't really matter. The fact that the apps operate similarly, I don't think that's a bad thing at all. Because if it was super difficult to go from an LG phone to an HTC to even an Apple phone, if it was that hard, you would have this bizarre brand loyalty and you would be locked in so hard because you're like, I only know how to do this on an LG XYZ. It's like, that's not the way this should work. You really need to have the ability to use this in a intuitive way that doesn't require a bunch of tutorials. Remember Windows 8 with that tons of those video tutorials. Here's how this stuff works now. And there's a charms thing on the right side. Yeah. And there's a, you don't want to do that.
No.
So the fact we have a bit of conformity, I don't think is a bad thing. We do have these little tweaks from Samsung, and we have the tweaks from HTC, and we've got the tweaks from LG. But right now, this is the form of the device that seems to work. And one day we'll get, you know, flexible phones and rollable phones and variants of thereof. But this touch interface is very good right now.
Yeah. I'm, you know, everybody wants a big change. That's the thing. Everybody, you know, and I always tell Paul, I think what happened was in the tech world with people that follow this, we kind of got spoiled in 2011 with the iPad. The iPad came out, the iPad 2 changed everything, really, if you think about it. And every year we were getting something new and better. And now it's kind of slowed down a little bit. Everything, we've kind of figured out what design works and what design doesn't. And we're sticking with it. Just like you said, that MacBook Air, that design is still kind of guiding the PC market. The Ultrabooks, you know, HP, for example, just recently got it right. They just started doing it the right way. They have this unbelievable lineup. Dell just recently started doing it right with those XPS 13s and 15s. You know, they're still doing it wrong, though. They're still taking those risks and screwing things up, like a webcam on the bottom of the Dells, which makes no sense to me.
Battery shot, yeah.
No sense to me why you want this shot. Because in photography, they always teach you, take a person's face and make them fatter by going down and up. Shoot them this way.
Yeah, that school of thought.
That's
that school of thought does very well. That's why it's been out of business forever.
Yeah.
You never want to shoot anybody that way. But yeah, I think so. We do have we have these touch interfaces. We have all this stuff now. But I think what we're still in the nascent period of VR and AR. These devices that could actually give you augmented reality, where if you're looking at something and you want to be able to identify it with your phone, the fact that they're getting faster and faster and faster, and the cameras are better and better and better.
Yeah,
that's where I think the next stage is. Where you're having the ability for this phone to recognize objects, this more proactive method of assistant. So it's really on the software side that we're going to see the changes that I think that's going to be the next gen of, hey, remember when you would have to search for stuff in your phone and you have to look stuff up versus it telling you, hey, by the way, you got to go right now.
That's a phenomenal point, because the fact that the software has gotten so much smarter, great example. I needed to find a black and white photo of my house. I have a picture from the 1932 census of my house. And I was showing something, you know, we're doing some work on the house right now. And I was showing the builder, the architect, the kind of this idea that I have. And I said, I kind of want to change it because it was an extension on the house. And I kind of want to bring it back to the colonial look of the house. And he goes, you have a picture? I said, I actually do. And I went to Google Photos and I put black and white photo house. And guess what? Pulled up the image right there. I would have never found this. I have tens of thousands of photos. I have no idea when I scanned it in. I kind of have an idea that I got this photo in 2015. So I'd have to search through all my photos to find it. It's so much smarter where I could say IAS. I could actually say shirtless IAS in Google Photos, and it will find a photo of you without a shirt if I have that on my phone, which I have plenty of.
True story. And it's weird how this information is managed, because
that's the big change. That's the big leap.
Now that everybody's got cameras and we're taking thousands and thousands of photos, we're not like really thinking about, oh, do I need to save this moment or not? It doesn't really matter. You're going to take a photo of it anyway. To find it and organize it, nobody wants to do that. Google does a really good job. Apple does a really good job of creating these albums for you, these little keepsakes, and you can change them. And it's great because it's taking away that barrier you would have to looking at your photos. Because I've taken thousands of photos too, but finding them, I don't want to find them. You find it. I literally looked up the word puppy, because it's National Puppy Day today, and boom, there's all these pictures of my dogs, and I'm like, this is perfect. Now, it didn't realize the difference between a puppy and a full-grown dog, but I'll take it.
But it's close. Because, it's just getting better and better.
I had no photos of a house, so perfect.
Yeah, it's actually it's amazing how intelligent it's gotten. You know, if you take just 5 minutes to kind of guide it a little bit with, like, Google Photos is absolutely brilliant. And this is something that I think they are doing way better than Apple is with their photo storage, their photo app. They're way, way, way better than Apple is right now. And I'm sure that Apple, you know, they're playing catch up, really. Google has this unbelievable algorithm right now that they're working with. But give another example. Google announced that they're killing Google Latitude, but they're incorporating live. You could share where you are live with other people via Google Maps now. You know, think of that information. I could actually tell you, like, oh, meet me on 5th and 33rd to Rattle and Hum, and I could see you make the wrong turn. I could be like, guys, you just turned right, not left.
I love that idea. It's like, hey, where are you? I don't know. Hit the button.
I don't know. Hit the button.
I know where you are. It's
crazy. That's the next leap here. I really think that's going to be the next major leap in, I guess, computing, you know, in personal computing and technology, where it's so smart. I'm going to put in, give me a phrase to put in. I'm going to try this right now.
Okay. A phrase to put in, like.
Yeah, in Google Photo. I want to see. Like,
look for stuffed animal.
I as cute.
Good luck with that.
I as drunk.
Oh, that would be great if you could actually tell emotions. It's a little or your physical state at the time. I as in a cast.
I as drunk. No, it doesn't come up I as drunk. But maybe it does. Well, it actually showed a zoomed in photo of your face that I have here cropped. I don't know why. You and Paul Throd. It just pulled up you and Paul. I mean, it's just every photo actually, it's so accurate.
You can look up beer. That'll pop up the drinks all the time.
Yeah, beer. There is a picture of me that comes up. Just me and not you. And a picture of my dog. Actually, when I put in Ayaz.
That's interesting. Maybe the dog's hair matched mine. I mean,
I don't know. It's amazing. And in a picture of me shirtless wearing a luchador mask. I'm not even joking. That's actually 100% real.
Like, we know about Samsung's Bixby that's coming up in the S8. Yeah. I'm going to bring it back to tech, sorry. And one of the things that it does, in theory, is supposed to basically duplicate everything you can do with your voice instead of using touch. So, like, what I'm looking forward to at some point is being able to say to my phone, just set do not disturb for the next 15 minutes. I don't want it to tell me how to do it. Like, go into settings and then hit this button and do this. No. When it understands what I'm saying, I want it to just do it. You remember like the old days with Windows Help? I used to use that all the time when I was really young. And you would hit the button and it would give you detailed instructions on how to do something. I'm like, why the heck can't I just push the button and you make it all happen?
Because it wants to teach you.
Because you know what I'm I don't want to learn. This should just be one button. Just hit the button. I'm all set here. So once you have this interface where you can just say, I need to find that image somewhere. Look, you don't know if it's in your Instagram folder. You don't know if it's in your regular folders. You don't know if it's in the cloud. You don't know if it was on Facebook, if somebody else took the photo. You let the phone do that. That's the kind of stuff I think we're really going to get spoiled with in the next 5 years. We're like, remember when we had to look for stuff?
So give me a good example, you know, with Bixby, for example, and, you know, I've been using a lot of the stuff with Google, you know, the assistant more than anything else. I use Google's a lot. What's going to be so special about Bixby?
Well, the claim is that essentially whatever you could do with the touch interface, you're supposed to be able to do it with your voice. So that's what one of the designers was talking about with Bixby when they introduced it, I think last week. I mean, this week, it's been a long week. And, so this is a speculation part here. I would imagine that if you wanted to switch Wi-Fi networks, you could literally ask Bixby to go switch from network one to network two because you should be able to do that, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you slide down, you have to hit the Wi-Fi thing, go into the network settings, pick the different network. It should be as easy as that. Or like, I'm not talking about just calling up apps or like dim the display by 15%. It should be able to do these kinds of things in theory.
Yeah.
Now, I know this for sure. We'll know next week. This is all that part of speculation when I'm talking about of what exactly it could do, but the fact that it's supposed to replicate a lot of the stuff you do with touch, that I think is the big hook.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I'm very curious to see what they unveil with this. Again, this is what's changing, right? This is the technology that we're going into. It's amazing. Ayaz, we are running out of time for this, but are you going to stay with me for 15 minutes to do a bonus show? Because I do have a question about how you use technology.
I would just have to check a schedule. I'm 99% sure I can.
Okay. 10 minutes. We'll just do 10 minutes.
Okay.
Guys, go to our website, gfknetwork.com. Paul Throd is back next week. We will be recording the show next week on Thursday, I believe. No, I'm sorry. On Tuesday. We will be on Tuesday. Paul and I will be back. And go to our website, gfknetwork.com. You can subscribe to the podcast there. Ayaz, anything coming up? What are you up to?
Go to twitter.com/Ayaz, IYAZ. You can see everything I'm doing there. I link to everything there. As long as that's a thing. Also, I'm on Instagram at Ayaz. I actually post a lot more there. Yeah, it's usually a little sillier. But if you want to know everything I'm doing, Twitter is usually the best way to find what I'm working on.
So you are hip like the kids, essentially. That's what you're telling me.
Yes, I am the most hip.
You are the most hip. Excellent. We'll see you all next week, guys. Take care.